endless men whose age will be not to defend some ancient creed, but to live out the laws of Christ in every thought and word and deed. God send us men alert and quick, His lofty precepts to translate, until the laws of Christ become the laws and habits of the state.
Welcome to God Send Us Men Ministries with evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart. We challenge you to open your Bible and follow along with today's message. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. To contact us or read and listen to more teachings online for free, visit GodSendUsMen.com. And now, here is evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart.
You are the light, the truth, the way. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the message this morning. Please remember those who are on the prayer request page on the website, and I don't have any updates from any of them, but I know that they appreciate your prayers. And do you ever have a moment where you say something or hear something and a memory just floods into your mind and even kind of overwhelms you? Well, I'm sure you do. But when I was mentioning the prayer request page and getting ready to say they appreciate your prayers, it made me remember my old, quote, church days, which thankfully was a long time ago. But I remember that whenever the preacher was preaching about prayer requests, it seems that his go-to phrase was, quote, they covet your prayers. Well, isn't that odd? Why would someone who claims to be someone who believes in God use a phrase or a word that has a word in it that's clearly against the laws of God? Thou shalt not covet. And this, to me, and to my knowledge, I mean, I don't think I've ever used the word, even if I thought it was a benign usage of the word, or using it as a word that just simply means, excuse me, desire, as in, you know, he desires your prayers. But to use the word covet, and in relation to something that God tells us to do, to pray for one another, I mean, isn't that just a bit odd? But it's almost as if someone is saying, you know, did God really say? I mean, it is to me, because I know that it has been the, quote, preachers in our generation who have spent their time telling all who would listen to them that the, quote, laws of God have been done away with. And then just to prove it to you, I'm going to be the first one to tell you, God said, thou shalt not covet. But I tell you, it's now okay because God's done away with his laws. I mean, for goodness sake, even if a man is sincere, I mean, though sincerely wrong in his beliefs, at least use words that don't go straight against the word of God. I mean, he desires your prayers. He requests your prayers. He's grateful for your prayers. But instead, he covets your prayers? I mean, really? Thou shalt not covet. But since we're coveting in the name of God, you know, that makes it okay. I mean, so strange. Just like thou shalt not steal, but unless you're stealing in the name of the, quote, government, then that's okay. Trace and I were having a conversation this week, and she basically asked me, you know, what I felt like was the purpose of my preaching. And simply put, I'm trying to reach people who are lost. I mean, people that are of the mindset that the kingdom/government of God is not for today, and they have the mindset that the little g, quote, governments of the world are okay, and even that God himself ordained the little g, quote, governments of the world to exist, and that people are supposed to obey them. And I'm trying to rescue people from that mindset, because that mindset is what is the foundational belief as to whether someone has found Christ or whether they're still lost without hope, without God in the world. This is not about whether a person has bowed their head and prayed and maybe even cried or felt remorse or had feelings of guilt and made an emotional plea to God to forgive their sins and come into their heart and save them. And I've seen lots of that in my lifetime, especially in the years of playing, quote, church. Thankfully, those days ended for me a long time ago. But what I described to you was a conversion to, quote, church. And that conversion to, quote, church, I mean, it can be emotional, there can be tears, there can be remorse. There can be a genuine acknowledgement by the one who is converting, in that they think that they're giving their life to following Christ. But friends, this is pretty sad, because the reality, the truth is, I mean, are they being led into a life of following Christ? Or are they being led into a life of following, quote, church? Church, the religious arm of the state, of man's little g, quote, governments. You know, the church demands obedience to the state. The church is demanding obedience to the state above all others, including Christ. I've pointed this out 1,000 times. Drive by any, quote, church on this land that's got a flag flying in front of it, and you're going to see 100% of the time, without exception. I'm still hoping for someone to send me a picture of the exception. But in my lifetime, every single time, you see the U.S. flag flying either in the highest position, in the middle, and if there's a supposed, quote, Christian flag, and listen now, I'm not saying that they're flying a real Christian flag, because the truth is the flag that they're flying is, it stands for church. It isn't a Christian flag. But the principle is, I mean, any other flag that they're flying stands, that they are flying, it stands underneath the U.S. flag. And they know exactly what they're doing when they find their flags, or they're using flag protocol. I found this quote of the U.S. flag. General display. Time. It is customary to fly the flag from sunrise to sunset, but it can be illuminated and displayed at night for a patriotic effect. Weather. Avoid displaying the flag in inclement weather unless it's an all-weather flag. Respect. The flag should not be used as decoration or draped over a vehicle. Position of honor. The American flag should always be the highest and centered flag when displayed with other flags. Processions. When carried in procession, the U.S. flag should either be on the right or the front and center of the flag line. End quote. So, in the position of honor, the American flag should always be the highest and centered flag when displayed with other flags. You know, they can say it doesn't mean anything all they want to. But when, quote, churches display the U.S. flag, they are following flag protocol, and they are telling everyone that the U.S., the government of the U.S., has the highest and most centered honor in this land. Most of the, quote, churches around here fly three flags. They fly the flag of the U.S. in the center and highest position, for the obvious reason. And then they fly the Missouri flag on what would be the right hand of the U.S., and it's lower than the U.S. And then they fly what they call the, quote, Christian flag, which is not Christian in any shape or form. It's the Churchian flag, and it always flies lower than even the Missouri flag. A few weeks ago, I saw one of these blasphemous displays, and it was on what they call, quote, Easter Sunday, and they had their flagpole display. Now, this one only had one flag, their God, the U.S., but underneath that flag, they had their three crosses displayed. To me, that was one of the most blasphemous displays of their objects of worship that I've ever seen. Really? The U.S. flag flying over what was supposed to represent the cross of Christ. I've got a picture of this in the notes. I asked the internet, is it customary to raise a flag over conquered territory? And this is what came back, quote, yes. It is a common tradition for victors in war to raise their flag as a symbol of victory and control over the conquered territory. This act demonstrates the victorious side's triumph and can be a powerful image used for morale and propaganda purposes. Here's a more detailed look at this practice. Symbolism of victory. Raising the flag signifies that the war has concluded and the victorious side has asserted its dominance. Control and territory. The flag raised on a conquered territory visually represents the victor's control over that area. Morale and propaganda. Iconic images of flag raising, like the one on Iwo Jima or over the Reichstag, have been used to boost the morale of soldiers and citizens and to showcase the nation's resolve. Yeah, the U.S. is above the cross of Christ. The photograph of six U.S. Marines raising the American flag on Mount Suribachi during the Battle of Iwo Jima became a powerful symbol of American victory. The Soviet flag raised over the Reichstag in Berlin after World War II symbolized the Red Army's victory over Nazi Germany. Standard bearers, historically, standard bearers, those who carry the flag, were a vital part of military units marking their position and serving as a rallying point for troops. Yeah, just like in the picture that I have here, the U.S. flag flying victoriously over the cross of Christ. Wow. You know, I've known for a long time that this is exactly what this means. But to read it, I mean, just really brings it to life. Seeing a picture of the U.S. flag flying over the cross of Christ. These people know exactly what they're doing. Their, quote, churches are subservient to their worldly, quote, governments. And even though church has nothing to do with the Jesus Christ of the Bible, the true Son of God, the Messiah King, they are saying that Christ was conquered by the U.S. and Christ is subservient to the U.S. And of course, they'll probably never say that. But when they demand obedience to the, quote, laws of the U.S. and Missouri and say that the, quote, law of God has been done away with, and they say the kingdom / government of God is either not for today or that it exists exclusively in the spirit realm, it's exactly what they're saying. I've been roundly criticized. Sharply. I mean, people said some of the meanest things for preaching that the gospel of the church and the true gospel of the kingdom / government of God are not the same. I've been blasted for saying that the gospel of the kingdom of the government of God is about calling men and women, boys and girls out of the ideology of living according to the, quote, laws of men and into living exclusively according to the laws of God and the government of Christ and citizens of the Commonwealth of Israel. And I will not back down. The Bible is not simply a spirit guidebook that tells you to talk nice to people, but rather it is a book that teaches people that there is a creator, the one that created the world and all that's in it, and it is the purpose of that creation to live by the very few laws that the creator laid out. Life is about embracing Jesus the Christ as the King and then following him, even if it means taking up a cross, the symbol of the death penalty, an arrest, a trial, a conviction, the sentence of death. For refusing to submit to the little g, quote, governments of men in their war against the government prophesied in Isaiah chapter 9, and of which Jesus the Christ was the fulfillment of when he took the promised throne of David by his resurrection from the dead. So what's the purpose of my preaching every week? Is to try to awaken people to the fact that the message of the gospel, the preaching of the gospel, is the same today as it was when John the Washer preached it, when Christ preached it, when his disciples preached it, when Paul preached it. It is the gospel of the kingdom government of God. Come out of the kingdoms of men and into the government of God. And then, for those who are awake, okay, I'm trying to give you ammunition in your work to help others wake up. So if it seems like I'm preaching to the preachers, okay, then it just needs to be that way. And not to mention the fact that I've told you before that when I preach, I'm the number one listener. I'm preaching to me. I need the encouragement. I need the reminder that this is all about living according to the government of God. I need to be encouraged to stay in the fight, to never quit. And I'm reminding myself of what the battle is about. It's my belief. And the more I think about it, the more I meditate about it, it's my belief that being possessed by devils, demons, Satans, or whatever you want to call it, means being possessed by an evil spirit, not a supernatural being like the world wants us to believe in, as in The Exorcist. Hollywood does not know the Bible. Hollywood does not know the God of creation. Hollywood is not where we should be getting our knowledge of God from, and neither is the Catholic, quote, church. Well, neither is any, quote, church for that matter. An evil spirit is an evil belief system. It is a belief system that is contrary to the teachings of the Bible. It's not a witch. It's not a goblin. It's not the body of Linda Blair in a movie that claims to be based on some real-life events that took place in St. Louis, Missouri with some Catholic priests. Marvel not that Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. The evil spirit is not dressed up like a witch or a red-tailed, pitchfork-carrying, wart-faced, ugly creature. The evil spirit dresses itself up to be pleasant, to be beautiful, to be desirable, to be acceptable. The purpose of my preaching is to warn people that the evil spirit is not what is made up in Hollywood movies. The evil spirit is always dressed to the nines, whatever that means. It's pretty, it's beautiful, it's desirable. Okay, we don't know what the serpent in the Garden of Eden was that was referred to as the serpent, but this we do know. Eve wasn't scared of it. It didn't present itself as evil. It didn't look like Linda Blair in the movie The Exorcist with her head spinning round and round. An evil spirit is a belief system that opposes the kingship, the present-day reality of the kingship of Christ. It is a belief system that makes a man believe that he has the power or the authority over another man to tell that man how he is supposed to live his life. The other day, Teresa and I were out, and I just pointed to just some random house on the side of the road. I didn't know the people, never met them, never even saw them before. And I said to Teresa as I pointed to that house, how is it that a man can look at that house and say to himself, I have the power to tell those people how they are to live their life, and whether they want to obey me or not, I am going to tell them how to live, and if they don't like it, I just might send armed men to that house and take them right out of there and put them in jail. Give their house to someone else, all because they do not live the way that I tell them to live. That's incredible to me. And listen, I'm not talking about the tiny little handful of laws that Romans 13 is talking about. For this, for this, for this, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not bear false witness. I'm not talking about enforcing those five laws of God on people. That is what's supposed to happen. I'm talking about the millions and millions and millions of, quote, laws, statutes, ordinances, rules, regulations that men have come up with. And they've said, if you don't live by these, quote, laws, then we're going to punish you. And I'm telling you today that the man who believes such things is possessed by devils. He is possessed by a demonic spirit that is an evil spirit possessing his mind, and that is the man who needs to be delivered by the power of Christ. The evil spirit is the one who believes that man is to live by the authority of man and not by the authority of God. And what's even worse than that, when the evil spirit demands people live by the, quote, laws of men and tries to convince people that God said so. It was God who said that you're supposed to live the way we say to live. I came across this article this week, and things like this just convince me more and more and more that what I believe about being possessed by an evil spirit, being possessed by devils or demons. This is what this means. Listen to this. This is from the New Republic, which I have no idea what it even is, but it's just something I found on the internet. Quote, ICE, immigration, ICE invades wrong home, steals their life savings, and then leaves. The link is in the notes. And apparently this happened just this week. So, and be sure to look at the article so you can see a picture of the man armed to the teeth with his mask on, his face covered. Of course it is. Quote, in Oklahoma City Thursday, about 20 federal immigration agents raided the wrong home, forcing a woman out of the house with her three daughters, not even leaving them enough time to get dressed, and then seized their phones, laptops, and life savings. The woman had only moved into the house 2 weeks earlier after relocating to Oklahoma from Maryland. The armed agents told the woman, identified by local TV station KFOR as Marissa, that they had a search warrant. But the named suspects on the warrant didn't live in the house and weren't connected to anyone in the family. We just moved here from Maryland, Marissa said. We're citizens. And that's what I kept saying. We're citizens. Amazing. That's how they treat their own citizens? Wow. The agents, who identified themselves as U.S. Marshals, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and FBI agents, didn't seem to care, waking the family up, forcing them outside in their underwear, ransacking the house, and taking the family's belongings as, quote, evidence. I told them before they left. I said, you took my phone. We have no money. Well, maybe you shouldn't have money on your phone. I just moved here, said Marissa. I have to feed my children. I'm going to need gas money. I need to be able to get around. Like, how do you just leave me like this, like an abandoned dog? They were very dismissive, very rough, very careless, the woman added. I kept pleading. I kept telling them we weren't criminals. They were treating us like criminals. We were here by ourselves. We didn't do anything. One agent told the family, I know it was a little rough this morning. It was so denigrating that you do all of this to a family, to women, your fellow citizens, and it was a little rough? You literally traumatized me and my daughters for life. We're going to have to get help or get over this somehow, Marissa said. The agents told her that it could take days or months for the family's stuff to be returned and wouldn't even give her a business card. It all fits a pattern of cruelty from the Trump administration. That's not just the Trump administration. It's every single one of them. All one administration does is pave the way for the next. That's all it does. It all fits a pattern of cruelty from the Trump administration in its efforts to deport as many people as it can. The White House doesn't believe in due process or following the law or even standards of basic decency. The violent raid in Oklahoma City would be wrong even against a family of undocumented immigrants, let alone U.S. citizens like Marissa and her daughters. Hopefully she and other victims of the administration's wanton behavior can get restitution, end quote. Friends, this is demon possession. This is how devils act. This is how devils treat people when their identity is revealed. Hey, this isn't just about immigration and Trump's war on the, quote, illegals. It's been going on for years and years and years. Whatever the political movement happens to be at the time, this is what happens. It just so happens that right now the mainstream media is anti-Trump, so the goons and the, quote, government are getting more attention. But things like this have been going on for a long, long time. I looked at the comments on the article and I wasn't really surprised to see that every single comment was critical of what their, quote, government had done to these people. But I will tell you that most people, when it's all said and done, would just say, well, that was just an unfortunate casualty of Trump's war. You know, bad things happen sometimes, but, well, you know, those people can sue the, quote, government and they'll get their things back and life will eventually get back to normal. It was just a whoops moment. But the truth is, this is the way evil spirits work. This is what evil spirits do. This is what demons do. This is what devils do. This is what happens when people fail to understand the very first verse of Romans 13. Let every soul be subject. Let every soul be subject. Let every soul be subject to the power of, to the authority of God. You can't vote God out in an election. You can't join yourself to others and call yourselves, quote, government, and then vote out the laws of God. But this is what men do when they create their own, quote, governments with their own, quote, laws, which are their own definitions of good and evil, right and wrong. This is what it means to be possessed by devils. And this is why I preach every week. This is why I've tried for my entire life to live what I preach. I've done everything that I know to do to live outside of man's little g quote governments, because man's little g quote governments are possessed by devils. They're run by demons. It's the domain of Satan's, and Christians are not to be a part of it. Christians are to have the mind of Christ. They're to have the mindset of following Christ and not following the world. Christians are supposed to have the mindset of having Jesus the Christ as their king, not having the kingdoms of the world as their king. There's no presidents, there's no senators and representatives and congressmen in the Bible. It's Jesus Christ the king. I've been accused of, quote, changing the gospel, of making up my own, quote, gospel. And I vehemently reject those accusations. I'm teaching the gospel that was once delivered to the saints. I'm preaching the gospel of the kingdom, the gospel of the government of God. It's the message that God did not tell his creation to live by the, quote, laws of men. But rather, it's a government established by him, with his son being crowned King of Kings and Lord of Lords, him being the last of the kings, the last of the lords that God allows for his creation. And why any man, woman, boy, or girl would not prefer his government over the governments of men is just beyond me. I can't imagine why people would prefer to live their lives according to the millions and millions of restraints and rules and regulations, as opposed to just the tiny little handful of laws of that God demands. I don't get it. I'm not preaching a gospel that I invented. I'm preaching that Christ is king. His Father is king right now. And every knee is to bow. Every tongue is to confess that Jesus is Lord. Man is not Lord. Man is not king. Man does not have the, quote, right or the, quote, authority or power to force one man or 1,000 men or 1,000,000 men or 300 million people to live according to what they believe is the way to live. That way of thinking is evil. It is demonic. It's satanic. It is not of God. And I'm trying to do all that I can do to convince people of the error of their ways and return to the simplicity of the gospel of the government of God. I believe that I'm being led of God to begin a series of messages proving exactly what it means to have an evil spirit. And then to what it means to have a godly spirit. Well, friends, I'm tired this week. I'm not going to take up the whole hour, but I'm going to plan on continuing this line of thought beginning next week. Now, before I go, I want to let you know that Doug and Mindy are planning on passing through sometime next weekend. And when we find out exactly when, if you'd like to come over and join us for a time of fellowship, just get in touch with us, and we'll give you the details as we get them.
You've been listening to God Send Us Men Ministries with evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart. To contact us or to read and listen to more teachings online for free, visit godsendusmen.com.